Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Steve Stone.
He didn't want to have Harry call him Michael Jackson.
And Lawrence Holmes.
Hey, what's up, Holmes?
Color analyst for the White Sox, Steve Stone, joins Lawrence Holmes.
Lawrence, there's something called the arrogance of performance. If you're a performer in whatever it is in your life where you're performing, you have to have the arrogance to perform.
You don't want to use a foreign substance.
No.
So KY jelly made right here in the United States is probably the best thing you can use.
Social media god Steve Stone and Lawrence Holmes, right now on The Score.
That's right. Steve Stone joins me throughout the baseball season, and we love talking with him. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from at Alpamonte Ford Melrose Park, or you could just check out alpamonteford.com. This segment with Stoney is brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. The White Sox color analyst, Score baseball expert, Cy Young Award winner Steve Stone now joins me here on The Score. Hey, Stoney.
Lawrence, how you doing in the midday here?
I'm doing really well. I'm happy to talk with you. I have a lot of questions. I want you to get as deep into the weeds on pitching as you can. But first, I wanted to ask you, have you heard anything about whether or not the White Sox and Cardinals are going to play a doubleheader tomorrow?
To this point, I have no idea. I don't know why it should be a doubleheader. We've got a three-game series. We only play them three times this year. I know they're missing a whole lot of games. They've only played five this year. But because we're only scheduled for three, I don't think they can make them up by playing six with us. They got to play somebody else. They got to play some of the teams they're missing. So I don't see a doubleheader in our offing, but who knows? This is a most unusual season. And it's one I think that the players, the fans, ownership, and everybody else associated with it realizes that pretty much anything can happen. And I think they're ready for anything to happen.
What did you think of what happened with Cleveland after they left here? You had Zach Plesac and Mike Clevinger being disciplined by being put on the mini IL and in quarantine. I was surprised to see players at this point in the season take risks that were unnecessary and dangerous.
I believe that it's monumentally stupid, and it's not a question of just putting your team at risk. It's a question of putting the baseball season at risk, because when you leave and deviate from COVID protocol, you risk the entire Cleveland Indians team doing exactly what the Cardinals are doing. I don't think we can have one more COVID outbreak to a team that looks like they're playoff bound and still have a baseball season this year. So it's one thing, Plesac did something that was entirely out of line, but one of the other things that was horrible about it was when they had the team meeting the next day, Clevinger did not admit that he was right there with him. And so you have two guys then going on a quarantine scenario where you're away from the ball club, and the greatest beneficiaries of that might have been the Cubs, because they play two games with the Indians and they don't see Bieber, they don't see Plesac, they don't see Clevinger, they don't see Savali. That's the big four in that rotation, and they're wonderful pitchers. You get Cleveland with those guys who don't give up any runs, it's going to be a real tough series. With all due respect to the remainder of the Cleveland rotation, it's not the big four. And, you know, there's an old saying in baseball, it's not who you play, but when you play them. It was a great time for the Cubs to play Cleveland. Does not diminish what the Cubs have done. It's just that you need some breaks. That was a huge break. But hopefully we won't see a repeat by anybody anywhere in the game of what happened with Plesac and Clevinger.
Steve Stone joining me here on The Score as we talk baseball with The Score's senior baseball expert and White Sox color analyst. You were having a conversation with Jason yesterday about Dylan Cease that I really enjoyed as a viewer of the broadcast, where you were talking about getting a feel for pitches. I since this is your show, you've got a little bit more room to stretch out on this subject, and I would love it if you would. I really loved hearing you talk about how to best utilize off days and bullpens to try and figure some of this stuff out. So what were you trying to express when explaining this to the audience?
Well, I think they realize that not every day do you pitch in a ball game. If you're a starter, you pitch once every 5 days. And in between, depending on what your pitching coach wants and what you feel comfortable with, you'll throw either one or two bullpens. I used to love to throw two bullpens in between my five-day rotation because I really enjoyed the one day where you get the soreness out. That's the second day after you pitch. Lactic acid builds up. You have to get it out. You have to get the stiffness and soreness out of your arm. And then the third day, then I like to really air it out in the bullpen for a little bit. But anytime you go to a situation where it's not a real game, you have to try to experiment to make yourself better. And understanding that normally, and let's go with the normal season because let's throw this season out, Lawrence. But a normal season, you got 6 months. You got maybe anywhere from 30 to 32 starts, which means your sideline pitching, you got anywhere from 32 to 60-some bullpen situations. And if you experiment, if you do things that you're not comfortable with, you do some new things. The object of the game of baseball, not only for pitchers, but for all players, is to make yourself incrementally better on a daily basis. Get yourself a half a 1% better. And then look at the cumulative effect over the course of the season, you find that you're considerably better than you were. This is a learning process for young players, for old players, for everybody in between. If you stop learning, you stop growing. If you stop growing, you don't get any better. If you get any better, eventually this game of attrition is going to take you out, and some younger guy, some smarter guy, some better guy is going to take your job, which all of us want to avoid. So by experimenting, what I'm talking about is, let's say you throw your cutter a certain way. Let's say that the cutter you throw is exactly the way it was invented. That means as a right-hand pitcher, it goes straight across, away from the right-hand hitter, into the left-hand hitter, and it stays up. Okay, that's your cutter. Fine, you've refined it, you feel comfortable with it. But let's say you want to get a little depth, which means you want it to go down instead of straight across. So in the bullpen, you work with a different feel, you work with a different finger position, you work with a different release point maybe, and you get some depth on it. And at first you can't, you know, you throw in one out of three good ones, maybe one out of four good ones. And then all of a sudden you find you can control it, then you see the late break, and now we have something in our bullpens called Rapsodo, which shows you the spin rate on every one of your pitches. So you're able to see the spin rate and get feedback almost instantly. And you can tell the good pitches from the not so good pitches, not only the eye test by control, but by a quantitative analysis of everything you're throwing in real time. It's a great advancement. And, you know, I hear people talk about old school. Old school means, like me, you're old. Then you're automatically old school. But if you stop progressing, if you just discard anything new because it's new, and we were better back then and the pitchers were greater and they were – that's a bunch of crap. The innovations in the game of baseball are revolutionary on many fronts. Doesn't mean they're all good, but it certainly means that some of them are very good, and we should avail ourselves of every way to get our guys better. Because make no mistake about it, pitching is our gold. The lack of development of your own pitching means you have to pay more. You not only have to pay more, but you're getting guys who are a bit older who will break down sooner, and you're paying classic dollars for them. So it's best to raise your own pitchers. Let's just take Cleveland as an example. Bieber's theirs. They traded for Clevenger. Savali is theirs. Pletko is theirs. Plesek is theirs. So consequently, they have a very controllable young pitching staff for their foreseeable future. You can build off that for a long time. Also, if you have to replace Lindor, and they're going to because I don't think they're going to pay what he's worth, then you have guys you can trade potentially. And that brings up something else, Lawrence, which is scouting your own system and understanding it better than anybody else does, which is essential if you're going to make good trades. But as far as getting back to the original premise of experimenting in the bullpen, that's something every pitcher should do under the watchful eye of the pitching coach, the assistant pitching coach, the bullpen coach, and then let them tell you the spin rate is this. Maybe we're going to shape this pitch different. You know, pitch design now is something that everybody is concerned about and everybody is doing. So we're moving forward. It's not all bad. People can't resist the inevitable increase in knowledge that comes with a baseball season. Use it, embrace it. It makes everybody better. But don't forget some of the lessons of the past. You have to combine the two. And the better you combine them, the better your staff and the better you're going to be.
Here's an update and breaking news on the scores brought to you by Dell Technology Small Business Podference podcast series available now on radio.com. This is from Joel Sherman, Stoney. Friday's Cardinals game with the White Sox is going to be postponed. The hope is that MLB will have the teams play a doubleheader on Saturday, which would return the Cards to the field for the first time since July 29th. Bob Nightingale was the first to report it, so it looks like you guys are going to have at least one more day off while they try to figure out, because it looks as if there was another positive test on the coaching staff for the St. Louis Cardinals. I would love to get your opinion on, we understand what this does, I think, to other teams, like what it does to the Cardinals, what it does to the Marlins. What does it do to the other team? Like, if you're the White Sox and you're preparing for a game, what are all the things that now go into what you have to do to try and keep your team sharp?
Well, a couple of things, Lawrence. First of all, the last thing the Sox want right now is an off day tomorrow. The reason is there's an off day today. Now, if this team was really now mired in a horrible slump, you would say, okay, you know, maybe a couple of days off would be good. But the team was starting to hit the baseball. Everything was coming together. Tim Anderson was back. He was giving the club a spark. And so you just don't want two off days in a row. It throws off your rhythm and timing. This season is disjointed enough. But for the Cardinals, it's very destructive. For the Sox, it's surprisingly something they don't want. Nobody wants in a 60-game season, nobody wants back-to-back off days. Doesn't serve anybody's purpose. However, then you get to once again realign your pitching staff, which is good. I mean, the Sox have the big three, and then they have maybe a bullpen day, and who knows who's going to be the other starter. But obviously, the big three you want out there every 5 days. They're young enough, they're strong enough. In the case of Dallas Keuchel, he has enough experience to know exactly what he has to do on a game-to-game basis. So I don't worry about Dallas. I think you need every 5 days to get your big three, and I think that really helps the team. But your hitters that are hot, they want to hit. Your pitchers want to throw in rotation. Your bullpen guys want consistent work. So this is not good for the White Sox, and it's particularly destructive for baseball and for the Cardinals specifically. And the fact that they are consistently having a new test every now and then, this is disturbing.
It's very disturbing. Steve Stone joining me here on the score. The latest news is that there's another positive test for the Cardinals. Therefore, the game between the Cardinals and the White Sox tomorrow night is postponed. Major League Baseball right now is hoping that a doubleheader will be played on Saturday, and then they could complete the series on Sunday. But usually if they bang one game, it's usually an entire series. On the broadcast yesterday, you guys were talking about it. You just mentioned it to me a little while ago. I thought that yesterday was the best game I've seen Tim Anderson play as a pro. And it wasn't just because, you know, he was a double away from the cycle. His first at-bat was tremendous. The way that he deked a throw that allowed for another runner to get a base, I thought he was just tremendous yesterday. Why is he such a spark for them?
Well, you take a look at his athletic ability, and it's off the charts. I mean, he was drafted number one by the Sox as primarily a basketball player who happened to play baseball. Now he's a baseball player who happens to like basketball. But you're seeing the maturation process on a daily basis. He just keeps getting better. The one part of his game that has lagged is the defensive aspect of it, which I assume, because he likes to work, I assume he's going to get better in that. And it's just a matter of footwork. I mean, you might remember Marcus Semien, who's going to be a free agent after this year.
Yeah.
He was a liability with the glove. The Sox knew he could hit, but with the glove, it wasn't too good. And it was footwork, plain and simple, footwork. Ron Washington was in a coach with Oakland. Every day, I saw it every day. I saw him out there, and I saw him out there in spring training. He was working with the footwork of Marcus Semien. How do you get yourself in position to throw the ball when you're charging a ground ball and you have to short hop it? How do you do it on the plant foot when you go to your right and you have to throw it from the hole? How do you get rid of it when you're going to your left? It's an off-balance throw and you're actually throwing away from your body. How do you do all of those things? How do you get your feet in position? How do you get to second base on a double play? What foot do you use? What's your timing? You know, and he did it daily. Marcus Semien is an all-star shortstop. He's a guy who can hit 30-plus home runs. But even more important to his ball club on a daily basis, he's a guy that fields everything. He makes the routine play and makes the occasional spectacular play. Tim can make the spectacular play. What he has to work on is the most boring of all things for a talented shortstop, the routine play. This is what made Omar Vizquel such an artist at shortstop, was that he made every routine play. And he made the spectacular plays. He was as sure-handed as it came. If there was a double play to be made, he was able to make it. If there was a ground ball in a key situation to end a rally or to end a game, Omar Vizquel made the play. He could do it with a bare hand. He could do it every aspect of what a shortstop has to do. Tim has that ability. He has those kind of skills. And we're going to see him get better and better at that. But until he makes the routine play consistently, then he's not going to realize the enormous amount of potential that he has. We're starting to see all that potential translate into performance. It's a pleasure to watch him on a daily basis, and he means so much to the White Sox team. So hitting in the one spot and giving some energy to this entire lineup, if Tim Anderson stays healthy the rest of the way, I don't think there's any doubt the Sox make the playoffs. If Tim gets hurt and then it becomes a real battle as to see who replaces him, I think they still have a good shot at it, but not near as definitive as if Tim stays healthy leading the way. He is the catalyst for this team. He will eventually, if he's not now, be the face of this team. He's great for baseball. He's a natural leader. And everything the Sox saw when they drafted him number one is starting to come to fruition. Tim Anderson is going to be one of the best players in baseball if he's not there yet. They don't give batting titles away, and he showed it last year. But the rest of his game is starting to come together. And to me, he's a pleasure to watch on a daily basis.
It was, I think, really important that you have Keuchel say what he said and then Tim come back to the lineup. How easy or difficult is it for someone who isn't part of the fabric of the White Sox, like Keuchel is, where he just got here, for him to be able to sit in that room, tell those guys what's on his mind, and then tell everyone who's a White Sox fan what was on his mind about how things were being played and how he wanted to see them change?
I think it was wonderful. And I do believe that the toughest thing for any player, and this is from the beginning of time till now, the toughest thing is to look in that mirror and critically evaluate yourself. You know what's good, you got to figure out what's bad. And you got to accept the fact that there are holes in each and every one of everyone's, each and everybody's game, there are holes. You got to figure out what those holes are. And you have to try to evaluate yourself, which is very emotional, but you have to do it dispassionately. You have to say, you know, I could really improve over here or that. Players have a tendency to work on everything they do good on a daily basis. Well, if you already do it good, maybe try working on some of the soft spots. And that includes every aspect of the game. Look, this White Sox team right now does not execute the fundamentals offensively and defensively on a consistent basis. When they do, everybody is seeing that they can beat anybody. When they don't, they can lose to anybody. It's as simple as that. As this team starts to execute fundamentally on both sides of the ball, they will get better. As they get better, they're going to make it a real uncomfortable day for who's ever facing them. I mean, everybody wants Luis Robert to stop swinging at sliders away and stop swinging at fastballs face high. Well, he's not going to do that. In baseball life, he's 12. I mean, he's a young guy who's just learning his craft. He's been in the major leagues a touch over 2 weeks. We got to give him some time. He's a spectacular talent, but nobody comes in and sets the world on fire. I mean, Mike Trout was really good when he came in, but now he's unbelievable. Imagine 5-6 years down the road what Luis Robert, who, by the way, evaluating him and Trout, he runs better than Trout. He throws better than Trout. Overall, he's a better center fielder than Trout. Power-wise, they're pretty much the same. As a hitter, Trout is refined. But imagine when Luis gets some years under his belt what he's going to become. This is perhaps the most exciting guy to come through the White Sox system. Every aspect of his game since Frank, but Frank was limited in his game. Luis Robert is not limited at all. Frank is a Hall of Famer, and if Luis hits like that, everybody's going to be ecstatic. But his entire game is magnificent, and we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg.
I wanted to ask you about two young guys that have gotten an opportunity and what you thought of them. Zach Birdie getting an opportunity last week. I really like Matt Foster, and I feel like he's got a lot to work with. What things do I need to be looking at to see if he's going to be successful?
Well, everybody on Twitter is asking now, can he be a starting pitcher? And I tried to explain one of the biggest jumps for young pitchers, especially who are used out of the bullpen, and Matt Foster has been used out of the bullpen his whole professional career, is facing a hitter that second, third, and fourth time. You have to give them different looks. You have to be able to move the ball. You have to show them something different that third and fourth time they come up. That's actually the art of being a starting pitcher. I think it's important for Matt to get his feet on the ground. What I like is a lot of people are missing that 94 and occasionally 95-mile-an-hour fastball. They're not on it. They're behind it. They're not seeing it very well. So there has to be a certain amount of deception. He also gets pretty good spin rate as far as the spin on the fastball, which gives it a little more elevation and gives him some life upstairs. That's one of the things that Dylan Cease will probably have to work on a bit, because his high fastball is really good, but it can be better if he's able to get some sort of leverage like Lucas Giolito has on backspin and keep the ball elevated a bit longer. I think Dylan's going to learn that. I mean, he's 3-1. He's such a young pitcher. His strides are remarkable. But the young arms, Lawrence, you're right. They're really impressive. And there's four or five really good young arms in that bullpen right now. And so this is hope, you know, for the Sox pen future. That's why the loss of Aaron Bummer was so difficult, because he was the complement to all the right-handers. Right now, all the great arms in that bullpen are all right-handed. That's fine, but you need a lefty or two that can come in and get the job done, especially in the day and age of now, three hitters minimum. End the inning or three hitters minimum, so that if your guy comes in, he can get some other people out. The specialists, the quote, you know, left-handed specialists we heard about, even the right-handed specialists, it's a little bit more difficult for them. So you have to develop better arms, and the future is bright for some of those arms in the bullpen. I think the Sox have seen that. That's one of the great things about this year. Not many great things about this baseball season or this year of 2020, but one of the great things is young guys who would never have an opportunity before are having their opportunity this year. They're getting to show what they can do against major league hitters in situations where it's a legitimate major league game. You don't have to figure out how he's going to progress from facing these guys in spring training to seeing them during the season. You're able to see it. Many of the guys who are pitching all around baseball this year wouldn't have gotten a sniff this year if it wasn't for the extraordinary COVID experience that is 2020. So that part of it's really exciting, and they're showing people around baseball. Because understand something, if you get a logjam in your organization, every time you go out there in a major league game, you're auditioning for 29 other teams. There's a lot of jobs in bullpens these days. There'll be more as they expand the rosters. And right now, this is such a wonderful opportunity for these young guys to show everybody, hey, don't disregard me. I got talent. You might like those other two guys over there, but I want to show you I got a little something here for you. And the Sox young guys out in the pen are doing that.
Stoney, as always, I appreciate it. I hope that we get the opportunity to hear you and Jason call games this weekend. Thank you so much for joining me.
Okay, Lawrence, have a good rest of the show. And, yeah, we're all hoping that all three of the Cardinal games get in. Sox are playing well, and we want to play as many games as we can. So I'll talk to you. We'll talk to you later.
You got it. That is Steve Stone, the Scores baseball expert, White Sox color analyst. I have one great guest, and I'm about to have another. Jason Goff has got some thoughts on college football. He joins me next on The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago's sports morning show.
The biggest names in college football have always been the coaches. And frankly, I could care less what Nick Saban thinks or what Dabo Sweeney has heard from his guys. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. What the hell have we been doing since it started? Absolutely nothing. wishing it away.
Mully and Haw, mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station. Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. A radio.com sports station.
We want to play a Big Ten schedule. I hope that's what happens. Our university is committed to playing no matter what. No matter what that looks like and how that looks. We want to play no matter who it is or where it is. So we'll see how all those chips fall. We certainly hope it's in the Big Ten. If it isn't, I think we're prepared to look for other options.
Or not.
Yeah, the door to that got shut pretty quick when they started to look and see, oh, $55 million versus not having $55 million. Maybe we don't want to leave the Big Ten just yet. Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. We just had a great conversation with Steve Stone. Ready for another great conversation with our buddy Jason Goff. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you can go to alpamonteford.com. Jason Goff's a NBC Sports Chicago Bulls analyst and host. He also hosts the Bulls Talk podcast for them. He is a good man and thorough, and he joins me now on the Score.
Yo,
what's up, Jay?
I'm watching you right now on my TV. It's not that I didn't know. I forgot that y'all were on Twitch.
So, Twitch.
Yeah, I see y'all on Twitch, and I'm watching you right now in the crib. If I can get my situation rigged and set up the way I want it to be, then it'd be a lot better. But the first time I jumped on Twitch, everybody who jumped on to watch me be bad at Call of Duty was like, bro, we got to change this angle, because it was very weird. It had a very crotchy kind of upshot, weird, sitting in a chair vibe. But this is cool, man. This is nice.
Yeah, the thing is I kept telling Shane and Gersh, because they were like, oh, well, we're going to put you on Twitch. And I was like, I need a table. Like, I literally don't have a table, because I had, like, a little, like, a serving tray that I was keeping my laptop on. I said, let me get a table, and then people can look into my basement a little bit. So
there it is. Yeah.
So maybe next time I'll turn around so they can see the Baroque painting that I have, which is controversial, to say the least. But maybe I won't.
Just getting on their good side, Lawrence. Come on now.
No, you're right. Yeah, it's a good thing. Gotta stay light skinned.
I mean, you don't have a choice unless you go vacationing somewhere for a long time.
Yeah, I get a good Coco Brown on when I'm out here in these streets, but it's tough to even be in these streets these days, man.
Yeah.
Jay,
that's the problem. Too many people in the streets.
Yeah, way too many. I've been paying a lot of attention to your Twitter account, as per usual. I mean, you're one of the people. Actually, you are literally the first person I followed on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are. When I joined, you were the first person I followed on Twitter. And I know that you have a lot of strong opinions on college football. So what's this week been like for you watching the SEC and the ACC kind of slow play this, and the Big Ten saying, no, we're not doing this. And the Pac-12's like, we're with them, we're not doing this. And then you have nonsense coming out of Lincoln, Nebraska.
Well, not just Lincoln, Nebraska, but, like, take a look at who's saying what. And if this isn't a time to negatively recruit, I don't know what is. If you are a child, or if you are a parent of a child who is – watching how things are going, whether it be in the ACC, SEC, whatever the case may be, in the end, the people are now getting louder because people who didn't have voices before have voices. And whether it be politically, socially, sports-wise, like, there's a little bit of an uprising, and the comfortable are not very comfortable right now. And when you take a look at the things that Dabo Swinney has said, I mean, Gary Patterson called a player the N-word, and then told another player that I will send you back to your town, which, by the way, isn't something that is far-fetched. Like, a lot of these dudes get threatened to get sent back somewhere, right?
We saw this with Iowa. This was a thing that was going on in Iowa.
Yeah, and talking to a couple people who engage in NCAA athletics here in this state, these dudes and these girls – there's a reason why they're cornered and quartered off from everybody, whether it be on the campus, whether it be the social media rules that a lot of these coaches have. they want to let you know that we care about you, but you got to care about us more. This is the family. Be a part of the family. It's us against everybody. Hell, look at the proximity physically to a lot of students. A lot of these big schools, you're not going to see a lot of players in the same classes as students, people who aren't student athletes. It makes me think that there's a bigger reason, a deeper reason for this, because the moment, and I forget who was talking about it the other day, and you got to check out, there was a piece in The Atlantic about it as well, but the moment these players started talking to each other, like, remember when you couldn't be on the phone too long with somebody that was out of state because it was going to cost too much money?
Yep.
So information wasn't as free and as easy as it is now. The group text and the group chat brought this thing to be. And I text a few people who wear certain Big Ten colors, and I'm trying to figure out what these guys and girls need, what they want, what's next for them. And when you listen to them, they're fine with the way things might be handled at their school. But the problem is, and that's the other part, the people who want these kids to play so bad are going to start painting these kids as people who are, quote, entitled, who are boat rockers, people who are, you know, who we don't need them if they don't want to come here. Well, guess what?
It's happening already at Florida State, where the kids at Florida State are telling you this is not cool and we're getting weird results on the test and they're not doing all these protocols.
Said what he said for a reason.
Yeah.
Deion Sanders and wants to be the head coach of Florida State football at some point. And he's saying the things that he's saying now about the game not needing the players and all it's ever needed is refs. Well, refs have come and gone as well, Deion. Like, they're the people who stand to make the most money off of these kids are asking them to not ask any questions. And I was told at a very, very young age, when it has to do with your health or your money, please understand the people that are trying to make you feel uncomfortable, they're trying to make you feel uncomfortable for a reason. Never mince words when it comes to a few things, your health and your money. And these kids are like, hey, I'm cool with playing football, but if we are in a conference and you're telling me this is kind of like our bubble, first of all, regionality doesn't matter because Lincoln, Nebraska and you know, Piscataway are very, very far apart, right? So it's not like this bubble of conference play is only going to be in a select few states. And then on top of it, the dudes that are saying these things are guys who are either have statues already built, Gary Patterson, or will have statues built, Dabo Sweeney, guys like this. Like, when the money is forcing you to make decisions that are detrimental to your health, I'm for an association, but I'm not for a union. What does that scream to you when Dabo Sweeney says that? Or when anybody says, well, you know, the Big Ten, you know, they kind of chickened out a little bit early, or Pac-12 players are getting on the phone with each other. You should listen to people who are worried. These kids are worried. And now that we're finding out the newer things about, like, the inflammation of the heart, how
yep.
this disease may scar the lungs going forward, what you're pretty much telling these children is, yo, somebody gonna get it. It might as well be y'all because y'all healthy now. And it is unfathomable when people who look like the people who are in charge are asking the cheap labor to go out there and hurt themselves. And let's face it, we got to start looking at this thing kind of in the way that record labels look at artists they can get over on, man. Like, people keep telling me about scholarships and housing and all these other things. Let me tell you something, man. All them cars is in Suge's name, right? Like, all them cars, all that shelter, all those sweatsuits, that's in the coach's name. And as soon as the coach is ready to take that away from you, look at the Nick Rolovich story at Wazoo. Nick Rolovich had a couple of players who were like, yo, I don't know about this, and I don't know if I want to play, and I think we need to have a stance as far as Black Lives Matter. And Nick Rolovich was straight up like, all right, so which one are you not playing because of? Because you will be treated differently because one of the is not the same. And in the end, it's all about human rights, right? So not listening to kids now would be the dumbest thing that you could possibly do. Because we love treating them like adults when they get caught with weed or they get a DUI or anything happens on these campuses. We can't wait to say, all right, get them up out of here, next one. I'll never forget. And some of the kids, yes, there are certain things that go on these campuses that cannot be tolerated. But there's the hammer comes down on some of these dudes at these campuses. Like, these powerhouse conferences hold a lot of small town and small regional thoughts. Like, Athens, Georgia ain't Atlanta. You dig?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like South Carolina is not all Myrtle Beach. So when you see these people looking at these kids and saying, not only don't ask, but fall in line. You mean to tell me 100 people in a room and all 100 are all, you know, lock, stock, and barrel ready to play football? Or is it okay for you to quiet the 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 that may be out there because you're looking at them like, hey, I got your shelter. I got your meal plan. I got all those nice clothes that you like to be wearing. And I got the public on my side because they want this game too. So get out. And by the way, it might mess up your draft stock. So all these things are happening for 17 to 22-year-olds, and we're sitting in the cut like, man, this is kind of crazy. Shout out to the Big Ten and the Pac-12. And for these kids that are getting ready to play, whether they want to or don't, I think a measure of respect needs to be thrown their way too, because this ain't easy for anybody involved. It's not easy, and you're only as strong as your weakest opponent in terms of who is managing this disease. This ain't cheap. There are schools that cannot afford the testing that is necessary for you to go out there and think you could play football. So now you're rolling the dice with your health. You're making sure that people above you get a bunch of money that you're not going to see. It's just a weird circumstance. And I just, for the life of me, I don't understand why people don't get it. Like, Dabo Swinney has been saying wild stuff for years. So why all of a sudden, when a pandemic happens, do you think that he's going to change? This is the same man that quotes Martin Luther King Jr. conveniently so, and then leaves out some of the quotes where he's talking about the times that we're in right now. And what we need to ask for is people. Like, this is the same man who said, if I'm not mistaken, when we start talking about professionalizing players or taking away amateurism, that's when I find something else to do. Like, when people say things like this, they kind of get brushed under the rug because of their success, because of the titles that they hold, literally. But, man, these dudes have been saying these things for a very – Lou Holtz comparing this to Normandy, bro. Like, these are the dudes who have been taking care, quote-unquote, of your kids and our kids – for generations, and all of a sudden now is coming to the top because of the times that we're in.
I think that you're dead on when you talk about the idea of negative recruiting. Like, if I saw some of this stuff that was being said, and I had a son that was college football age, there would be coaches that would be crossed off my list.
What?
From the way that they are acting. And the Lou Holtz thing to me is amazing because, like, let's forget about the fact that most of those young men that gave their lives bravely at Normandy were drafted. They were drafted. They were forced into service, and they served, and they died for this. And to minimize their contribution to the Republic, I found that to be really disgusting. I also thought it was interesting, Jay, and we're talking with Jason Goff. You should follow him on Twitter, Jason1Goff. And you should check him out on Twitch. Give him the Twitch so they know where to find you on Twitch.
It's Jason Goff 1, because apparently someone took Jason1Goff. So it's Jason. I'm out here with all different kind of shell companies and brands, fam. Like, like pretty soon I'm just going to be putting stuff in – well, not pretty soon. It's already happened. But pretty soon I'm going to be putting stuff in Jason's name. Like, it's
Twitch.
Yes, he is on the Twitch. So I thought it was really interesting that you had this moment where Trevor Lawrence kind of became this poster child for, see, this is what it should be. And then people stopped short of understanding of what he was actually saying and trying to hold him up as some evidence. And it's already there, like tall, good-looking, blonde quarterback, national champion, like it's already there, but they didn't understand that what he was talking about was unionizing.
The we want to play thing, like, it went from we want to play if this happens to people who only read headlines retweeting it like the bots that they are. Like, look, see, these kids are fine, they're smiling, they're wearing Nike, everything's okay. Like, you know, the helmets will protect them from the disease. Like, all these things. And then you read and it's like, oh, they want to play. They just want to have a say. Like, the problem with the, quote, association is different than union thing is you can have someone that they pick for you go sit at those tables in those discussions. But if you have a group that is going to vote on and think about the well-being of the working class, because that's what these dudes are being asked to do. Let's face it. you get your classes, you know, and you're sheltered in a corner of the university, and you got to make sure that you're out there being healthy and not getting in trouble. Like, you're different from a regular student. Well, guess what? You should start being represented differently than a regular student. And I'm for it, man. The thing that those Northwestern dudes tried to do, I thought it was amazing to watch while it was happening. I knew it was far-fetched. And what these kids are finding out right now, Lawrence, and something that they've kind of known, but they were scared because you only get 3 or 4 years to shine, is ain't no product without you. Like, you are the content. You are the product. Ain't nobody signing up to watch, you know, Dabo Sweeney walk up and down the sideline. They're signing up to watch athletes compete at a very high level for high stakes and a pressurized moment at a very, very young age. So with that, I think that a lot of this revolutionary type of vibe that we're seeing right now is coming from a lot of the young people, man. Like, you know, George Floyd and all these other things. Like, you look at the people who are on the ground in these situations, and these peaceful protests are young people. So why not give them a voice when it comes to what they are going to do with their bodies? I don't get it. We treat them like children when it's convenient to us, and then treat them like adults in times that may be inconvenient for them. And I think this is one of those glaring moments where it's very clear for you, and it's become politicized now too. So now what you're getting, it has been politicized, but what you're getting now in a weird way is, you mentioned Trevor Lawrence, but like Justin Fields and a lot of the Stanford athletes that started this in the Pac-12, it's a bunch of young black men who were like, all right, let's get everybody together and talk about what we really got going here. And then Trevor Lawrence was the big name that was like, hey, y'all, we need to really take a step back and see what's best for us going forward. The problem is, on the other side, you're getting a whole bunch of the same kind of person saying, this is bad. This is scare tactics. We're not fearful. There's risk assessment. All these things are being thrown out now while these kids are still trying to figure out where their heads are at. Because a lot of them do want to play, right?
And of course they do. Listen,
they want to play. They've played for the last 19, 20 years of their life. I understand what missing a season feels like for them. But they're not saying, oh, man, screw this, we don't want to play. They're like, yo, how are you going to take care of us? Like, if a president can't answer right now what happens when you get an outbreak on your team, then you shouldn't play. And I'm talking about a real answer, not a Jerry Jones, we're going to handle this thing with grace answer either.
Ridiculous. Jay, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. A lot of people saying you're a Call of Duty game is trash Twitch. You readily admit to that. Yeah. RIP to the Heralds on 87th. I wish we could have more time to talk about that, because there's a lot there, too. Yeah. Damn, I should have saved you for Monday, man. I should have had you on the show Monday.
I'm around. You know, I just plug this thing up and, you know, send Jay up to the rooftop and, you know, hope he's got no dents in his head when I go up there and get him.
I hope that's the case, too, because
you know, you drop your baby off, and you're like, all right, he's got all his eyeballs. We can go back in the car now.
He's fine. Put some dirt on it. Go out there and play with this COVID.
You know,
Jay, I appreciate you, man.
All right, one love. I see you out here, Gertz, on the chat. But oh, look at this. This is. I might watch this for the rest of the show. It's like a chat going on. People calling me crazy. This is nice.
Yeah, it's got all. It's all the stuff that you left behind with local radio.
Don't do that. The great stuff that you're
out here doing stuff nationally.
No. Still working at Finish Line, trying to keep my check engine light off. as my man Ice would say. Let me get
gotta
out here,
make
man.
Sure you've got Pampers. Gotta make sure.
Yesterday I heard I wasn't reading enough books. I'm like, damn, man, can a brother live? Like, I just wanted to play a video game with my friends, you know? Like,
yeah, that's what happens. That's what happens. I'll talk to you, man.
All right, bro. Y'all be easy.
That's Jason Goff. I'm late for a break. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
First hour of the show is flown by. Steve Stone, Jason Goff, tremendous ways to kick things off. I'm going to introduce you to someone that I've been following on Twitter for a little bit and on Instagram, Josiah Johnson. If you're an NBA head, you'll want to make sure that you are here for this. But also, if you just like creatives, we're going to talk with one of the NBA social media's must follows next here on The Score.
Start your day the Mullion Hall way.
I am here for you.
The live and local Chicago sports show in the morning. The show Chicago sports fans trust to find out what happened the night before in Chicago sports.
Every morning I turn you guys on just to make my day into work a little less stressful.
Mullion Hall, mornings 5 to 9 on 670 The Score, Chicago's number one sports station.